Welcome to Hype episode 159. My name is Selena. I'm back from the forest. I hope you remember my voice. I'm here with Pam this week. Hi, Pam. How are you?
I'm good. We missed good. You.
I heard.
You've been gone for 84 years, you know?
It feels that way. That's what it's like when you never have a vacation. When you finally take a vacation, people are like, where is she? She's always here. But I hear that you did pretty well without me, like to the point where I'm thinking I don't even need to be here because you and the listeners can just hang out and talk about the news.
Oh, I was so nervous.
Guys, I'm not going to quit.
Please don't quit. I would cry in a corner. I would have like... I don't even know what I would do, but yeah.
Worry.
But I am glad that people seem to be enjoying that episode because I was like really nervous about it. After I wrapped it, I was like, I have to put this up now, but like, what if nobody likes it? Like, what if this is the stupidest idea I've ever had in my life? But thank you.
And it was the
well.
Best idea. Not that you haven't had other good ideas, but it was so, like, people were so into it. And I loved that our listeners finally, because it's been something we've talked about it before, like getting mm-hmm. listeners on the show and sort of hearing their voices and doing voicemails and stuff like that. But it's always been, like, a little bit daunting. And then, like, you were just like, yeah, I'm just going to invite them on the show. And it was so brilliant. And it turned out so well. So, like, yay for that. That was a wonderful surprise to come home to.
Yeah, we had a nice little episode while you were away, but never leave again, or for like at least a while.
I was going to say, no, you can't leave because I have to do something to like top it. I did not know what to do.
You have to keep up with the Joneses. No.
But yeah, no, and thank you to all the listeners who participated. It seems like there's like a mood for doing it again sometime, so that's good because
I mean,
it was
like,
kind of like a trial, so
I figured that we might not get like too many people that wanted to like come on just because it is the first time and it's not like we have like, you know, like a massive following, but we do okay. Mm-hmm. So hopefully now that we've done it once and you guys that have listened kind of got a feel for what happens, you'll be more interested in perhaps participating. So yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, maybe we should start compiling a Skype username database for our listeners so that we're ready for next time, whenever that is. But
yeah,
now you guys know, so keep an eye out on Twitter and you never know when we'll do it again.
I know. Maybe something to do with when we do our Merlin show. Maybe
yes.
That'd be
oh
fun
my God. Yes. Can
in.
We? That would be so fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
So many plans.
I know,
anyway,
so little time.
And we do actually have a full show to get into this week. So maybe we should just move steamroll right ahead. That is a sad reference to a story that's coming later in the show.
Oh, no.
not as bad as you think, but it's pretty sad for me. Anyway, we have a lot to get to before we get to that point. But as always, we want to start-ish with the contact information. So if you have any thoughts about this week's episode of Hype or anything we talked about last week or anything you want us to talk about in the future, you can email us hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter at hypeablehype. Those are the places where it's probably most beneficial to contact us. But you can also find us on Instagram at HypeableHype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. And you can leave a comment in the podcast section under episode 159. And of course, if you are interested in becoming a patron or if you already are a patron supporter, then you can go to patreon.com/hypepodcast to find all of the bonus information and or the bonus content, I should say. We have our weekly bonus discussions, we have videos, and this week's topic that will go up on the Patreon will be a more lengthy discussion of Gossip Girl, which had its 10-year anniversary this week of the pilot. And there's been a lot of internet nostalgia for the classic teen drama. And me and Pam, of course, were huge fans. Apparently, both of us were huge fans and we never knew. So we're going to talk about that on the Patreon bonus segments. On the regular show, we have a bunch of different news stories coming up, music and movies and TV and books and The 100 and Game of Thrones that we're all going to talk to. But we're going to start with our How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. And even though I just spoke a lot, I'm going to keep speaking for a little while longer, because my How We Hype this week, actually, when I was on holiday, I didn't go on the internet, which was a revelation, guys. The real world is so beautiful. You should check it out sometime. But I also read a couple of books. And one of the books I read was The Winner's Curse by Marie Rutkowski. And this, Pam, do you remember when I won this book?
I remember. Yeah. Didn't I tell you to get it?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Did you like it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad.
I did like it. And you told me I would. And you were so right. So yeah, so I picked this book up Comic-Con 2016 and I won it, you know, so I guess I'm cursed, which if it's like in this book, then I don't mind that because it's, you know, all about love and stuff, which is nice. But yeah, so The Winner's Curse is a book by Marie Rutkowski that is the first in a trilogy of books. And I'm already halfway through the second one, guys. That's how much I liked it. And I am going to, for our Patreon supporters, I'm going to have a lengthy video review up on the book where I talk more in depth about what I thought about it, because there, I feel like there's a couple of different topics to go into that, you know, are maybe a bit too lengthy for the regular show. But yeah, no, just basically the book is set in this like alternate reality where there's a group of people called the Valorians, who are this conquering people that has conquered a place called Harran. And they have enslaved the people that live there, who are the Harani. And then you follow a girl, this happened 10 years ago, and you follow a girl who's grown up in this regime, and a boy or like a young man who has been enslaved by her people. And then you follow both of them and you see you're made to, even though obviously you would empathize with the Harani through the eyes of the main character, who's called Kestrel, you're sort of forced to see her side of it too, and you sort of experience as she begins to break away from the norm that she has grown up with and sort of begins to, and obviously they fall in love and it's all very romantic, and it's a really interesting book. I think it makes you think in interesting ways, and the world is really engaging, the characters are really engaging. Have you read it?
I have read it, but a very, very long time ago. I think I'm due for a reread, because it was one of those books that I read the first one and then the other ones weren't out. So I didn't read the rest of them. And now I feel like in order to hop back on, I would need to read the first one again before reading the last two or like the next two. And I'm focusing my efforts on the Raven Cycle right now. So it's going to have to wait.
You have to catch up.
Yeah, I do have to catch up. But yeah, I remember being really enthralled by the story, and it's just like really beautifully written. And like you said, it kind of like has all these different layers to it that really make you want to like read more. And I feel like it was like one of those books where I just like was thinking about it a long time after I put it down too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just kind of, I was very
enthralled. Yeah, it sticks with you.
Yeah.
Same. I feel like if you're listening, you're wondering whether to pick this up. I feel like it's a lot, it's very similar in style to the Selection series, which I know we're also both fans of. Like it has that sort of glossy feel to it, but it's still very, very engaging, and the characters are very engaging, and it's sort of like, it's terrible. It's also like the Hunger Games a little bit, like it's terrible, but you're really engaged by what happens, and you feel sort of very strongly the injustices that are being done to these people, and that sort of makes you think in a really good way. So I really like it for that, and plus it's just a really entertaining and really gripping romance. You know, for YA, I'm not a huge fan of YA romance, but this one really stuck with me. And now I'm on book two, and I'm like, just make out already, you people.
Now kiss.
Yeah, exactly. That's me with this book. So how have you been hyping?
So I was on Sunday, I had like one of the busiest days of my life, and I couldn't really watch anything, including the Game of Thrones finale, which was really hard for me, you guys. I like basically just like left the internet and forced myself to leave the house until Wednesday. I mean,
I hope you watched it now, because I'm gonna talk about it.
No, I have, because I watched it Tuesday night, but like Monday and Tuesday, since like my day was so packed, and then like I just knew I wasn't gonna have time to sit in front of the TV. It was like, I'm just gonna stay away from the internet, stay outside, do all my work outside, which is crazy because I work from home, so it's like, what is happening? Anyway, so one of the things that I missed that I then caught up on after I watched Game of Thrones was the MTV VMAs. And it was kind of like, I don't think that you necessarily need to like go watch them if you missed them, because they were kind of all over the place. I think that Katy Perry was like not the best host in the world, but there were some really great highlights, including Kendrick Lamar's opening performance. He's just like a great live performer. He puts on a wonderful show, and his music has a lot of layers and depth to it. He's like killing the game, not only in his genre, but just like in music in general. And there were a lot of like performances like that that were really like standout performances. Specifically Pink's performance, she actually was there to receive the, I think it's the Michael Jackson Award, just for like how long she's been around and stuff like that. And I'm sure you've seen this online too, Selena, because it's been getting a lot of traction. She actually had, she dedicated her speech basically to telling the story about how her little girl was, you know, came home one day and said that she was the ugliest girl because she looked like a boy, and just like really had this empowering message of like how it doesn't matter what you look like as long as you're, you know, you're a good person, and like you can find success even if you're not like pretty. Pretty is not the most important thing to be. And so I thought that it was just, it was just beautiful. So definitely check out some of the highlights. And like Google some of the performances if you're interested, but definitely no need to sit through the whole show for sure.
I haven't actually seen that one. I saw like, you know, pictures on social media and stuff, but I haven't watched the video, but I might have to now because it sounds very sweet.
Mm-hmm. It was very sweet. And her little girl was there in the audience too. And she's like adorable.
Oh,
yeah. It was good.
Yeah, so I made you go last because it transitions nicely into news. So why don't you just carry on?
So the other big moment at the VMAs this year was that Taylor Swift, you guys, she's been gone for a while. She dropped her music video for Look What You Made Me Do. Like, yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. So this, let's back up a little bit here. Last week we talked a bit about what Taylor had been teasing via social media. About a week before her single dropped, she cleared like everything on all her social channels and started posting these really weird like videos of snakes, like different pieces of snakes, and it all led up to the announcement that she was set to release the first single off of her forthcoming album, Reputation, which is due out on November 10th, in case you're curious. And then last Thursday, she dropped the first single off of Reputation, which is called Look What You Made Me Do. Now, I was online when this dropped and also frantically writing for Hyperbole at the same time. And I think that the traction this song received is very interesting because there were a lot of mixed reactions right away via Twitter. It kind of sounds a little bit like what you might have heard Britney put out in her like In the Zone days, blackout days. Mm-hmm. And people seem to be like either really into it or just like really loathing everything about it. She interestingly also, and this is not a secret anymore, sampled Right Said Fred's I'm Too Sexy for the chorus, which is why a lot of people found it really catchy at first, couldn't really pinpoint why. And then later when the writing credits came out, turns out she had credited all three members of the band because they allowed her to use the original recording into the interlooping of the chorus. So that was pretty cool. But I do feel like the world was singing a different tune after the music video dropped, because regardless of what you think about the track itself, the music video, like the production of the music video, is kind of amazing. Most music videos have like three scenes and that's like impressive in and of itself. But this one has like multiple scene changes, multiple outfit changes, and it definitely shows Taylor leaning into this narrative that the world really wants to push on her, which is that she's a snake and she's not who she says she is. And I think that the best part of the music video is the end, not because like the music video has ended, but because she has this scene where she's like on top of this platform and she's like fighting off these old versions of herself from like different music videos and different albums, and then they're all in a line at the end and having an argument with each other. Like, she's having an argument with all these different aspects of her personality. And I've read a few theories online, and one of them that I thought was really interesting with regards to this whole scene is that there are allegedly, I think, 16 tracks on the new album, or maybe a little bit less, but this person that, like, brought this up realized that that's how many Taylors there are at the end in a line. So the popular theory right now is that perhaps because the album is called Reputation and it's set to, you know, talk a little bit more about how people perceive her, maybe every track on the new album is going to talk about a different aspect of her personality. And that's kind of how they all fit together, which I think would be a really, really interesting concept for sure. And it would also be really great because it would give people a little bit of everything. So maybe if you don't really like What You Made Me Do, there might be something else for you here. I have so much more to say about this. I just want to do like a whole Taylor monologue. Maybe I'll do this for my video. I'm just going to stop talking.
You should.
Tell me what you think about this.
Well, I'm not like a brief backstory of my relationship to Taylor Swift. I don't really have one. I'm sort of aware of her, and I have enjoyed her music sort of on a very casual level in the past. And I didn't necessarily think this is not like my kind of music, you know, like I'm not going to be listening to the song unless it like happens to come on the radio. But I really enjoy sort of the discussion going on around it. And I really enjoyed the music video. I thought that was really, really cool. And I love that because when, you know, and you know more about this than I do, obviously, but pop stars right now to help spark conversation online, you know, there are so many feuds and there are so many like personalities going on, and like you said yourself, this is very Britney-esque, you know, when she had her dark phase and she had her like, I'm gonna break up with my old self basically and embrace the new Britney. And I feel like Taylor Swift is really good at reinventing herself and really good at sparking intrigue and keeping herself relevant, and I really admire that. And I think that I'm very, very interested to hear this album, particularly if it does kind of embrace these different sides of her personality, because I think that sounds like a really cool concept for an album. And I think, you know, just because I don't necessarily enjoy the song itself doesn't mean that I don't kind of enjoy what she's doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And you make a really good point at the idea that she's really good at reinventing herself, because the thing about Taylor that I always tell people, because it's funny that she's been around for a really long time, but a lot of people really jumped on the Taylor train right around Red, which was kind of like her precursor to full-on pop star, and specifically in 1989 when she was making more universally appealing music. But the thing about Taylor that people always say is like, oh, she's like so much better in 1989, but what she has always been as an artist is a storyteller. So even if you're not a huge fan of Taylor Swift and like you think, oh, the sound is not for me, if you really want to get a deeper insight into like the way her brain works, I would just suggest like just go online and just start reading like the lyrics to her songs, because she kind of tells you like everything she needs to tell you. And the thing about songs too is like everybody is always like, I think they're a little unnecessarily harsh about the subject matter she writes about, but even if you're talking about like relationships, like everybody has a different side to the story. So the only reason that we give her so much crap is because we only ever hear her side, but that's because she's got a platform, you know, to do that with. But you're right, like at the end of the day, she is really good at reinventing, and she's got that line in Look What You Made Me Do where she says, you know, I rose up, what did she say? I rose up from the dead. I do it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what she's doing. And for better or worse, this is the new trajectory she's taking as an artist. And if it doesn't work, hey, it's just a phase. There's always album number 7.
And by the way, from the first moment I heard this, the line in the song where she goes, oh, the old Taylor can't come to the phone right now. Why? Because she's dead. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Did you see, by the way, so because like stupid, obviously but it's, the internet mm-hmm. was not lost on the internet.
Oh my god, the
parallels
memes.
Game of Thrones the, so much.
The best meme to that one is the one with BB-8. I don't know if you've seen it, but no. He hasn't. You know, there's a new droid design for the new Star Wars movie, which is like an all black like BB-8 type, and it's like the old BB-8 amazing. Can't go to that yeah. one right now. It's so fun. Oh my god! But that line, like, and that's the thing about Taylor Swift is that line should not work, but it does.
I mean, the thing is, like, she's also notorious for putting. Like speaking things in her songs, and again, they shouldn't work. And you think to yourself, "Oh, they're surely going to cut this out yeah. from the radio edit," but they don't. It's like even in "We Are Never Ever," she does that whole thing. She's like, "So he calls me up, and he's like, 'I still love you,' and blah blah," you know. And you're just like, "Why do I like this?" But I like it. But yeah, that's like the new iconic thing, right?
But that's again a Britney thing, right? Because it's she dropped it into the ocean in the end, all over again.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh
my so god, funny. Is Look What You it. Made Me Do her oops?
It is! Oh. Literally! Oh my god!
Wait, but it's literally the same song.
This is like a game changer. Oh my god.
But yeah, it's no, like, back to my point, like the Aria, like, I don't know if
there's
Pim's a...
This is Pim's next feature, everyone.
An Aria parody to this. I don't know if you saw it online. It's just so funny. It's like, this is what I didn't realize I needed until I saw it. But yeah,
I know.
Anyway, tweet at me and let me know what you think of the new Taylor album. Not the album, but the new Taylor single and the new Taylor music video, because I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say.
And I look forward to seeing your line by line comparison of "Oops, I Did It Again."
That's
look
actually
what you made
my
me do
video.
Because like, oh my god, I'm like shook. I don't know if I can continue the show. I'm like, oof. Anyway, we do have to continue the show. And the next story in the doc is both baffling and sobering and confusing. So both of those three things. There is a remake in the works of a iconic movie/book. That is no surprise because that happens all the time. But this one is particularly interesting because it is Warner Brothers has greenlit a remake of the adaptation of the classic novel by William Golding, of Lord of the Flies. The twist in this new adaption by a pair of men called Scott McGehee and David Siegel is that this one will be an all-female reboot. And you know what's hilarious is that I never thought that we would be in a position where we said, please don't make a female reboot of this, but that is where we are.
That's so true.
Like, literally, they picked the one property that is not suitable for a female reboot. And there's been so much discussion on social media that so many people have done really intelligent takedowns of why this is a terrible idea. And I know you wrote up the story, so I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts.
Well, I didn't really put my thoughts into the article because I was trying to get the news story up as soon as it broke. And man, like Selena said, Twitter was shook, you guys. But I think the main problem with this story is that the original book came out in the 50s, I think. And the entire concept for it is that it's a commentary on society. So these characters are children, but they've grown up seeing what society is capable of, and then when they're left to their own devices, they bring out the worst in the power players of the civilized world, and they all kind of come to life in this really nightmarish way on this island. But like back in the day when this book was meant to be a social commentary, like who was actually in power in the world? It's men, you know? Mm-hmm. So like what are women supposed to take from that? Like would they like, you know, it's like, it's meant to be a commentary on literally the man and how man has like ruined certain parts of society. So why would you put that blame on women?
This type of reboot is exactly as illogical as if they had announced a gender swapped version of The Handmaid's Tale, you know, because it doesn't apply as a social commentary,
right?
Because that's not how the world is, you know, and I feel like that's kind of like what you're saying, like I'm not even going to say if Hillary had been elected, because that wouldn't fix the world. But like, mm-hmm. if we were living in a different type of society, then I could sort of see, because I guess what the core thought behind this is, well, you know, let's examine what would happen if it was a group of girls. And let's sort of examine the more, quote unquote, like primal nature of humanity through women. And mm-hmm. a part of me thinks that that is a really interesting idea, because I do think there's a lot of people who say that female characters shouldn't be like the same as male characters. Like you should make them different. And I always disagree with that. Like, not that you can't have female characters that are different, but I also think that fundamentally so much of what we assume are differences between men and women are learned. So when you put girls in this kind of desperate, isolated survival place, then I don't see why you couldn't expect that they would devolve into a similar, or you can imagine that they would devolve into a similar state of like chaos and anarchy as happened, what happened in this story with the boys. But the issue is exactly what you're saying, that Lord of the Flies, this specific story, is a commentary on, you know, the fall of the British Empire, which was led by men. And it's a commentary on, like, yeah, a male-dominated world, exactly. And so I think that doing it with girls is sending a really weird message. And maybe if they were going to explore the more sort of primal state of girls, they could do that with a different type of story.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like to really make this work, and again, I want to say, too, that we're also not saying that women don't have the ability to be violent, but you do have to take into account, like, when this story takes place, which is why it's so weird. It's not like, for example, in The Hunger Games, that's a dystopian world where women are bred a different way. You know, they're not necessarily brought up to be the nurturers, which is what mm-hmm. would have been the case if we're taking, like, the original tome of Lord of the Flies into consideration. That's, like, a time when women were not meant to be, like, working. They weren't meant to be leading, for sure, you know? But, like, with for example, with The Hunger Games, it's, like, you see people like Joanna Mason, who is a ferocious killer. But there has to be some kind of catalyst to make this story work for girls to have the same results that you see in Lord of the Flies. And maybe there will be that. But, like, just as a story that's meant to take place, like, in the real world, kind of, like, because that's basically what it is. It's like, this could actually happen. So this is what might happen. With no dystopian elements, it just really doesn't make a lot of sense on the surface.
Yeah, exactly. And people are also obviously taking issue with the fact that it's two men who are doing this, which is obviously not to say that a man couldn't write a good story like this, but it is sort of another red flag. I did just want to mention one thing, is that people have tweeted me this on Twitter, so I wanted to make sure that I pass it on to the listeners, which is that actually a female version of or reimagining of Lord of the Flies does kind of exist in book form. It's a book by Libba Bray called Beauty Queens, which a couple of people have tweeted me independently of each other, both saying that they really like them. And it sounds a little bit also Hunger Games-esque, because it's like a team beauty queens who are like sent to a desert island to... Or no, they strand on a desert island and they have to sort of survive in similar circumstances as the boys in The Lord of the Flies. So, you know, that sounds really interesting. That's called Beauty Queens by Libba Bray. So you might consider checking that out. I think I'm going to check that out, because it does sound really interesting. And obviously, you know, if you want a reboot of Lord of the Flies, you might want to check out The 100 on the CW, because I hear that has some similar elements. I'm back, guys. Anyway, carry on.
I love that little plug. It's great. All right. Well, here's some really, like, moving on from one potentially bad idea to a really great news story. Ed Skrein, who is an actor, was previously cast as Major Ben Dynamo, I think that's how you pronounce the name, in the upcoming reboot of Hellboy, which is set to star Stranger Things' David Harbour. And when he was cast, there were a lot of eyebrows raised because Daimo is Japanese American in the original story. And so it's kind of like another instance of whitewashing. And it's a common problem in Hollywood, but nobody really thought anything was going to come of it because studios never really listen when people, petition for change, unfortunately. But Skrine took matters into his own hands earlier this week and actually announced in a really, really nice statement via his Twitter that he was stepping down from the role because he had been made aware that his casting was whitewashing the original part. So he wrote, "Last week it was announced that I would be playing Major Ben Daimo in the upcoming Hellboy reboot. I accepted the role unaware of the character in the original comics was of mixed Asian heritage. There has been intense conversation and understandable upset since the announcement, and I must do what I feel is right. It is clear that the representing this character in a culturally accurate way holds significance for people, and that to neglect this responsibility would continue in a worrying tendency to obscure ethnic minority stories and voices in the arts. I feel it is important to honor and respect that. Therefore, I have decided to step down so the role can be cast appropriately. Representation of ethnic diversity is important, especially to me as I have a mixed heritage family. It is our responsibility to make moral decisions in difficult times and to give voices to inclusivity. It is my hope that one day these discussions will become less necessary and that we can help make equal representation in the arts a reality. I'm sad to leave Hellboy, but if this decision brings us one closer to that day, it is worth it. I hope it makes a difference." I mean, this is like a dream come true, wouldn't you say? Like,
I would.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now it's up to the studio, basically, to make sure that his stepping down wasn't done in vain, basically.
Right. This is kind of, it's funny because this, obviously this could have gone away fairly quickly because Ed Skrein is just, or Screen, however you say it, is just one of many actors who have been placed in this position. And he's the one that chose to say no. He's the one who chose to reject it. And there have been other actors in his position before, one of them being actually Zach McGowan, who was cast in a Hawaii centric story a while back, and we sort of talked about the implications of that on the show, I think. But the fact that he is the first to openly reject it in such a way, when I saw his announcement, I expected it to be kind of glossed over. You know, I expected people to be like, "That's nice, that's wonderful," and then say, "I hope Hollywood listens," and then sort of carry on, because you see so much backlash to whitewashing, but you never see any, like, I kind of felt like Hollywood would never change. But it's been amazing to see not only how much people have picked this up and how many news sites have written about it, but also the fact that actually people in Hollywood are really positively responding to it. It feels like this is I'm so wary of being too hopeful, but it feels like a tipping point. You know, it feels like studios can no longer deny the implications of whitewashing and the repercussions, and they can't deny the moral responsibility that they have. And I feel like now that this actor has called them out on it, it's like people are responding. You know, I was reading this article, I think it was on EW or The Hollywood Reporter, which had been talking to casting agencies who were like, "Oh my God, our eyes have been opened." And we're sitting here like, well, they should have been open a long time ago, but also wonderful that they are finally open now, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, progress is progress, so we shouldn't be bitter that it's not moving fast enough. The important thing is that the pendulum is swinging in the way we want it to go.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And it seems like it is. It really seems like people, and we hope that he is just the first of many, because now it's kind of shown not only it can be done, so many actors and creatives, you know, I saw Ava DuVernay saying now she wants to work with him, and John Cho wants to work with him, and like everyone wants to work with him now, basically. And that's exactly how it should be, because it will hopefully inspire other actors to follow suit, because obviously for actors working in Hollywood, the idea of saying no to a part is unthinkable, because actors want jobs, you know?
Yeah, it's tough out there. And you see so many like bigger And like, no disrespect to them, but it's just, it's so funny because there are so many more high profile actors that have taken roles and like,
you know, like Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, yeah. Emma Stone, Tilda Swinton. I'm sure there's men too, but I can only think of like the more recent examples. And you never really hear them comment because it is, you know, like what Dumbledore always says, sometimes it's better to do what is, you know, right and what is easy. We all have to make that choice. And the easy route is just be like, not my problem. I was cast. I'm just doing my job. But here comes Ed and he's like, nope, this is wrong. I'm gonna do what I know is right. And it's really inspiring.
It is.
So that's our feel good story for the week. And it's still my turn.
It is.
All right. Well, speaking of representation on the big screen, there is a upcoming book to film adaptation set to come out soon that is probably one of the most important stories we'll be seeing in a while. So The Hate U Give, which is a book by Angela Thomas, it's actually her best-selling debut novel, is officially getting the big screen treatment. And the story centers around a girl that grew up in a poverty-stricken neighborhood and then ends up going to school at a prep school across town. And she kind of has to live with these two different identities, but things kind of come to a head when she witnesses one of her best friends unarmed get shot by a police officer. And the story, the book tells the story of how she finds her voice and learns to speak up in a time of severe injustice. So very relevant to a lot of the things that are going on today in the world. And the cast for this movie keeps getting better and better. Amandla Stenberg, who was most recently seen in Everything Everything, but we also know very well from The Hunger Games, has been cast as the main character in the upcoming adaptation. And she is actually going to be joined by two actresses that I'm really excited to see on the big screen. The first is Issa Rae, who we know very well from Insecure.
Yeah, I love her.
Yeah, she's set to play an activist named April in the film who is going to have a very important relationship with Star, who is Amandla's character, and she'll be kind of teaching her how to stand up for herself and speak out against the severe injustice that occurs in the story. And then Sabrina Carpenter, who what is most probably best known for her work on Girl Meets World. She plays Riley's best friend, Maya, on there, has been cast as one of Star's friends from the prep school. So I'm really excited for both of these actresses. They're both so great. Sabrina Carpenter is probably not as well known, arguably, unless you did tune into Girl Meets World like I did. But she was so good on there. Towards the end of the show's run, she had a lot of really emotional storylines, and she's such a great little actress, and I'm so excited to see her do more. So this is a great next step for her. And yeah, always down to see more Issa Rae anywhere. So
yeah, same. I haven't read the book, but I love Issa Rae. So that was enough reason to get me excited for this.
Mm-hmm.
So cool.
No release date yet, though, so we're going to have to wait and see. Okay. But for now, the book actually came out, I think the book came out in May. It hasn't been out very long. So if you're interested in picking it up, it's out in bookstores now.
Cool. So moving on to television, we have some bad news to start off with, even though I have a confession that I thought that this was not news. So I was very surprised to see this written up. But apparently it's official now that the Xena Warrior Princess reboot on NBC that we raved about when it was first announced like 2 years ago, we were so excited. It's officially been, you can't really say canceled when it never started, but it's no longer happening at NBC. And it was, you know, it was already all the way back in 2015, actually, that it was first announced. And it was former Lost and The 100 and Charmed and The Chronicle and The Middleman writer Javier Grillo-Maxwatch who was developing it, who, you know, I follow him on Twitter. He has a podcast. He's very accessible to his fans. And he was sort of getting us really, really excited for this Xena reboot. And he was talking about the ways in which that he was hoping to honor the relationship between Xena and Gabrielle. And it looked very promising. However, the reason that I didn't know that this was news was because Javi actually announced on Twitter like half a year ago that he had left NBC's reboot project because of creative differences. And so I think that when that happened, I was sort of like, okay, well, that's it then. I guess, you know, we can give up our hopes and dreams. But apparently, you know, it was still kind of in the development phases, and it has been shelved with the official statement or by NBC, as reported by Pam on Hyperbole.com, saying nothing is happening on that right now. We looked at some material. We decided that at that point that it didn't warrant the reboot. So basically they looked at what Javi had done and thought it wasn't good enough. So now I'm mad at them because he's amazing. But yeah, I'm very upset about this. If you couldn't tell, it's like a bad news all over again.
I heard that, I can't remember if I put this in the story or not. It was a while ago, but I heard that the differences stemmed from him wanting to include a potential gay couple in the series. Like, he wanted to follow that story arc for Xena.
I don't know if that's what it was, but that's kind of like what the... Like, if he said something about that, then I missed it, and then we should probably go find out. But that's kind of what I was afraid of.
That was I think it was a rumor. Now, yeah, that's why I didn't include it in the story, because it was... That was what Entertainment Weekly said reportedly happened. Anytime you see reportedly, for those of you guys who don't know, it means that you should take it with a grain of salt, because that's just a rumor somebody heard from a fairly reliable source that doesn't necessarily mean it came from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, so, right. And I think and I think that's kind of, I mean, again, I have no idea what's real and what's not real, but I know that the thing that he was talking about when developing the reboot was that in the original show, obviously, the relationship between Xena and Gabrielle was inferred, and in some cases, like, almost made text, but never completely made text. And I think he was quite adamant that he wanted to make it actual text in this reboot. So it would basically be a story about Xena and Gabrielle falling in love in this world of Xena the Warrior Princess, which might not be why they rejected it. You know, like, we have, you know, a rumor is a rumor, and NBC, it's not like they are... It's not like they're CBS, you know, like, it's, you never know, like, what decisions. I know that NBC, I think it was NBC that had Emerald City as well. And I know that they had a lot of issues with the showrunner and that show. His name escapes me. Tim Minear? No, that wasn't it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It does, but I can't remember right now. But so... Like, when taking on these fantasy properties like Xena also is, and honoring the original and bringing it into a new era and deciding, you know, what kind of people, even so much as acting in there or casting and stuff like that, there might be many reasons why they're, what NBC wanted to do with it didn't align with what Javi wanted to do for it. But when he left, I assumed that that meant that we could sort of wave goodbye to his plans for Xena and Gabrielle, and that's part of the reason why I sort of lost interest in it at that point. Either way, there's still sort of, like, that's what you also said in the article, that they're kind of still hoping for a Xena reboot, but they're, like, hoping that someone will come to them with a better version than what Javi gave them.
It kind of just sounds like there's going to be a lot of micromanaging involved, exactly. Which is kind of really upsetting, because it's like, if I don't know. And it's also like, what are you doing here? Is NBC, right? NBC?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, if you want a specific story, why don't you just tell the people that are pitching you, like, I want you to do this. Can you do this? Like, not that that's the right way to go about it, but it's like, you're running around in circles for no reason. So why are we even trying?
Right. And like, I think, because I'm a huge fan of Javi's writing, but I haven't read his script. So I don't know if it's good, but I know that he's a huge fan of Xena. And I know that his heart was in the right place, certainly. And it seems like NBC has a very specific vision for what Xena, their new Xena, what they want it to be. And I am sort of skeptical that I will enjoy their version, because I am so biased. But who knows? I mean, that said, if they come back in, like, a couple of months and announce that they have Kim Shumway doing it or something, who's also a writer on the 100, or, like, some awesome female executive who has a awesome new idea for it, then, you know, I might still be interested. But as of right now, it's kind of dead in the water, and that's a shame. The end.
I'm sorry, truly sorry for your loss.
Thank you. I'll be fine.
Oh, well, maybe this next news story will cheer you up, perhaps.
It might.
Maybe it'll open up old wounds, you know, and pour some salt in there.
Might.
It's a catch-22 with this one, you guys, but let's get to the actual news story and stop transitioning here. ABC is continuing on their plight to bring more superhero series to the small screen. And earlier this week at the Edinburgh TV Festival, Senior VP of Original Programming at Marvel Television, Kareem Zarik, I hope I pronounced that right, revealed that they're actually looking into greenlighting a new female-led TV series. So this little tidbit of news came from The Hollywood Reporter, who I'm assuming was in attendance at the event, and they wrote, while he wouldn't offer specifics, he also revealed that the Marvel TV was working again with ABC, which had partnered with him on Inhumans, on a new female-focused show currently in development. And the only thing that he teased us with regards to this proposed new show is that it's, quote, Jessica Jones-esque, which has a lot of people theorizing over whether that means it's going to not only star a woman, but also be kind of along that grittier noir type vibe that we got from Jessica Jones. So not too much to go on here. No word on when this is going to potentially make it to air, but it is something that they're toying around with.
But why couldn't they just keep Agent Carter? Because they already had it and it was amazing.
And okay, that's the salt in the freshly opened wounds. I know. That's everybody's question, too. It's like, what? You had this great thing I never even saw.
And you already have an Agent Carter.
Agent Carter is like my favorite show that I've never seen. But even I'm upset for you.
Seriously, it's your favorite show. It's going to be your favorite show.
I know. It's my aesthetic. And yet.
But like, that it's so stupid because they have Jessica Jones on Netflix and they had an Agent Carter on ABC. And it was so good. Like, why? This doesn't make any sense. It's just so mad. Like, every time that Marvel announces something new and it's not Agent Carter, I get more angry. But yay, female-led series. Like, I'm not scoffing at that at all. I'm just like, you had a good thing. And sometimes I feel like networks cancel good things and replace them with less good things for no good reason. So, yeah. So there. That's what I have to say.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're going to move on to talk about The 100 because there was some news while I was away. I knew that this was going to happen because season 5 has started filming, like we talked about on our last episode. And they are doing some casting now and they've added... I believe I talked about this on the last episode I was on. I talked about the new actor who may or may not be Raven's love interest, who's going to be arriving on the Eligius ship. And now we have another actor, this one, a woman. Her name is Ivana Milicevic, I believe. And it was Kristen who wrote up the article, and she pointed out something that I would not have remembered, so I'm glad that she wrote this up, that she was actually on Buffy. She played Sam Finn in season 6. I had totally forgotten, but now that she said it, that's where I know her from. So I'm like, oh yeah. She was also in Gotham, and on The 100, she will be playing a character named Charmaine Diosa, or Diosa. And Charmaine is another name that they are taking from the writers. We already had a Shumway and an Aaron, a bunch of people. Now we have a Charmaine. And she's described as a ruthless military strategist who will go head-to-head with a few of our main characters. She's likely going to be the leader of Eligius, because Jason Rothenberg teased at San Diego Comic-Con this year that the leader would be a female character, and this is a woman, so put two and two together. It seems like that's the way it's going to go. We're still missing one. As far as we know, there's going to be three significant new characters from Eligius, and we've only met two of them, so there's still one left. But yeah. So Ivana Milicevic, I'm so sorry, I don't know how to say her last name. I will learn because I will have to say a lot when she debuts in season 5. Are you intrigued?
I mean, I'm always intrigued by the 100, but specifically because there's so much room to play now that they've jumped forward. So
yes.
It'll be really fun to see the new dynamics for sure. If, not just this newly announced cast member, but just everybody else they've brought on to tell this year's story.
I know. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. There was a picture on Twitter today. I don't know if you saw it, but it was Octavia covered in blood. And
I didn't. I think I have to follow more of the 100, big time fan things. Or maybe I just need to pay closer attention to your Twitter.
I think you do, because I try to stay up to date with all of it. But that looked really, really cool. But yeah.
I'm going to look you up right now. I'm curious.
Yeah, you should. It's very it's very arresting. And Isaiah Washington tweeted about having left the set, so now people are saying that maybe she ate him.
I did see that. Oh my god, this picture looks crazy.
She totally ate a person.
Oh my god.
Like, that is what's happening here.
this is the real Lord of the Flies we signed up for.
This is Cannibal Crew. Yeah. I know. Oh my gosh. This is terrifying.
Wow.
I'm
retweeting
sort of
that right now.
I'm coming around to Team Religious, I'm not gonna lie. I think they might be the sane ones when they come down. It's gonna be very interesting. Anyway, we should move on to the last story in the news, which is a little bit sad, although it's always a little bit bittersweet when we talk about Terry Pratchett and his legacy. Terry Pratchett obviously was the author of the Discworld series. He passed away in 2015 following complications with Alzheimer's disease. And now, a few years after his death, one of his last wishes was finally carried out. He wanted his unfinished works to be destroyed, specifically by a steamroller, specifically the vintage steamroller named Lord Jericho at the Great Dorset Steam Fair. So that has been done, and his works have been steamrolled, and I'm very upset, obviously, because like his writing was on there, and his unfinished works were on there, and I obviously, as a huge fan of Terry Pratchett, I would have loved to eventually get those. But I can totally respect, obviously I can respect his choice, but I can also understand where that desire comes from, because when you look at someone J.R.R. Tolkien, it seems like there's a new Tolkien book being released every week. Like, they uncover a lost manuscript of his King Arthur story, or of a new romance, or a new part of the Silmarillion, or whatever. A new Beowulf, and they seem to keep pushing those out. And I sort of understand why another author who has been so prolific in his career will want to make sure that his legacy doesn't become tainted with stories that aren't finished. Like, hell, you know, if my like half written articles drafts on Hypable ever saw the light of day, like, that would be terrible because they're not what I want them to be yet. And I say all kinds of horrible things that I most of the time remember to edit out before I publish. So, like, I totally respect it and I understand it, but the Pratchett fan in me is still very sad.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say that I'm a big fan of Terry Pratchett just because I haven't read any of his books, but
so it's hard to.
Yeah, but I am familiar with what his tomes have inspired on the, you know, in other people's works and on the big screen and things like that. But it is unfortunate that it is like one of those things, like you said, that you understand why, because people get greedy as soon as these, the rights for these kind of end up in public domain. But it's too bad. What a way to go out, though.
I know. And that's it.
Dramatic.
Like, Terry Pratchett. Terry Pratchett is so, if you ever read one of his books, and I highly suggest that you do, I have a few recommendations if you ever feel like it. They are so quirky in the best way. They are hilariously random and morbid in a funny, hilarious way. And this is like the perfect end for...
Wait, I just remembered books. I have read one Terry Pratchett book. I've read Good Omens.
Oh.
But it was only half Terry Pratchett.
It's like a half.
Yeah, it's like I read half a Terry.
Oh my god. Well, That, well, that kind of counts. Although I will say that I personally am a bigger fan of Discworld than Good Omens. Well,
you'll have to send me some recommendations.
I will. I will. His books for The Witches and Death are still my favorite. They're so hilarious. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the news. And we are going to move swiftly along now because we have another 2 hours. I'm kidding. We have a discussion of the Game of Thrones season 7 finale to get to. I'm very excited to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
Hashtag boat sex and other stuff that happened.
Before we get into that, though, can I just give a quick shout out to The Bold Type? Because I'm really sad that next week is the last episode of season 1 and it's getting so good. And I really hope it gets picked up for season 2.
Hasn't it been picked up yet?
I don't think so. I'm not sure. I haven't seen any major headlines. I feel like the show's getting so much traction that I would have heard one way or another. By now. I'm gonna say no, but I'm also gonna say that I'm pretty sure it's coming back, but
I hope so.
But I hope it gets a bit of a longer second season, because 10 episodes is great for a first, like, you know, an inaugural season, but I think that they've proven that they could play around pretty well with like 16 probably if they were given the chance.
So anyway, Game of Thrones.
Yes, Game of Thrones. Stop listening now if you haven't watched the finale, but I'm sure all of you probably have.
You must have. Like, it's the thing.
If even
like,
I saw it,
millions
finally,
and millions of people saw it.
At like
crazy.
5 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday.
Oh my God. So what did you think?
Oh my God. Can I just say that, first of all, I remained unspoiled, which is like a blessing. I feel well and truly blessed.
I almost did as well, yeah.
Yeah, I think the big thing that I probably would have been spoiled on is not necessarily Jon and Dany, but the fact that Lord Baelish is no more.
Oh my God.
I know.
I forgot.
But the thing is, you never forget. That was like the only moment that I was kind of worried, honestly, because... Mm-hmm. It was like, basically, it would have been really easy for them to have Sansa turn on Arya, which is like, that was kind of like everybody's worst fear. But I was happy that they didn't go down that road.
I'm really disappointed by that storyline, though. I wrote an article about it on Hyperbole as well, and I won't talk too much about it now because you guys can just go read that article. But, you know, the fact that it twisted at the last second was very satisfying. And I'm glad they did that. And it would have been terrible if they had not done that. But I still feel like, you know, Sansa and Arya have both come so far that it was disappointing to see them in the second to last season of the show kind of regress. You know, like, part of me kind of understands they're children and they have been through hell. And when they reunite under peaceful-ish circumstances, that the fact that they default to an earlier contentious relationship, it does make sense. But I just feel like when there's so little time left of the show, and when we've seen these two girls, particularly Sansa, go through so much terrible stuff, like seeing them basically have this petty little feud and being tricked by Littlefinger was so dissatisfying. And even knowing that Sansa figured it out, basically at the last second, she was like, wait, maybe I should like ask my magic eight ball brother before I like have my sister killed. Like, it was still very frustrating to see. And it was very frustrating to see Arya especially turn on her sister and turn all of her anger and resentment inwards towards like one of the only living members of her family instead of towards one of their like many enemies, including Littlefinger. So that was kind of probably the part of the season that I'm most disappointed by.
Yeah, I think that you're right. And we talked about that a lot, kind of like halfway through the, like, kind of like towards the midpoint of the season, that it is kind of too bad that that was still an issue, even after all of this time they spent apart. But
yeah,
hopefully now.
But now that, they're united.
Now they're
united. Good.
Yeah. And I hope that, you know, like, it kind of sucks that it took Sansa to, like, she couldn't trust Arya enough on her own. Like, she had to be, like, absolutely certain. It does kind of suck that that's the case, but yeah. I'm kind of hoping that, like, that's the end. You know, I just, like, I feel like we've seen that rift between those two. We don't need to see any more. Let's just, you know, let it lie and yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I agree. And I do think that's sort of them. This was them regressing, and now we'll see them moving forward. But in a season where I feel like everybody else has been, like, sort of almost frustratingly straightforward and forward thinking. Like, you know, someone like even Daenerys and Jon, obviously, but also everyone who went beyond the wall and even people at King's Landing. Yeah. Like, they've been so
even
reasonable.
Like, even, like, Theon, who's finally, like, right. getting back to his old self. Like, but, like, a better version of himself. Like, everybody
exactly.
has grown except for those two.
Exactly.
And Cersei.
Everyone's been...
But, like, what does that say then well. About Sansa and Arya?
Mm-hmm. Right. I feel like the people that have acted impulsively and kind of... detrimentally this season have been Cersei, Arya, Sansa, not really Sansa, but a little bit Sansa, and also kind of Daenerys. And that is frustrating.
So it's basically all the women that are not level-headed.
Exactly. And that's frustrating. But I do, well, that said, again, credit where credit is due. I think that Sansa, it was the thing was mostly coming from Arya, which is frustrating as an Arya fan, but I'm also a big Sansa fan, and I think she did the best she could, and I'm glad Littlefinger is out of her life, and I think that the fact that they were standing there next to each other remembering Littlefinger... No, remembering their father, Ned Stark.
Yeah.
it's them growing up,
yes.
you know. And they've had a relatively peaceful season, all things considered, and when the worst thing that happens is, like, petty intrigue, then I think on Game of Thrones, you're doing all right, you know? So
that's true.
There's a bright spot. Anyway, I want to talk about other stuff.
What do you want to
what
talk
else do
about?
I want to talk about?
Do you want to talk about the elephant in the room?
Yes.
The shapely butt in the room.
How did you know? Oh, my God. So it's funny. You were talking about spoilers earlier. And actually, the only thing that I was spoiled about this season was the word boat sex. And completely out of context.
And you were like, but who could be having sex on a boat?
Like, oh, yes. And that's the thing, like, completely out of context, no idea who it was, when it was happening. And I was going on to the finale. I was like, could it be John and Danny? And I was like, are they really going to get together? Oh, my God, it's moving so fast. And I was like, I'm shipping them so much. And that came out of nowhere. I was not expecting it. So I'm, like, a little bit taken aback. And then we came to the finale, and they were on a boat. And I was like, oh, my God, it's happening. And it was so beautiful. I've seen so many mixed feelings in fandom. Some people are saying that it's really awkward and they don't like it and they don't think they have any chemistry, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. I love it. I think it's amazing. I think that this Game of Thrones season has been so weird and fan servicey and melodramatic and so different from what I think the books is going to be, but I don't care.
Look, I'm only going to love it fully if they don't ruin it by this making this big reveal about Jon being a legitimate Targaryen.
Oh, they are
going to
ruin it.
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Then it's just like, this is why we can't have nice things, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like, now Daenerys wants to kill Jon because she's too threatened. And
well,
like,
I'm like convinced that the story is gonna go this way, that mm-hmm. they are in love now and they just like
yeah.
got together, fire and ice got together.
Right.
They're gonna arrive at Winterfell. They're gonna be like, oh, by the way, you're related. Jon is gonna be like, oh shit, now I can't be with you, because even though the Targaryens like marry family all the time, and Dany's gonna be fine with that.
Yeah,
she's gonna be
like,
great,
no, it's
you know,
fine.
Now we can get married. And he's gonna be like, no, my honor, I can't. And then she's gonna be really mad. And then she's gonna realize that he has a better claim on the throne than she does. So if he doesn't marry her, then he has to die. No, I don't think she's gonna be that extreme. But I think that she's gonna realize that if he doesn't marry her, then he is an enemy to her. So that's gonna be a lot of tension.
Right.
And then they're gonna find out, obviously, that she is pregnant, because duh, that's obviously going to happen. Of course. Why they made like a million references to the fact that she couldn't have children.
Okay,
and
that's the red
the
hair.
Dragon
Got
died.
It.
So there has to be a new head of the dragon, right? Because there's only two now. And she's going to be pregnant. And then Jon is going to be like, oh shit, like,
no, I have to
marry
her.
The last thing
I
want is to make
another
bastard. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then he's going to be like, okay, I want to marry you anyway. And she's going to be like, but that's only because of the baby. And he's going to be like, yes. And then they are going to get married, but it's going to be for all the wrong reasons. And she's going to like basically marry him so that he doesn't take the throne from her. He's going to marry her because he doesn't want the child to be a bastard. and it's going to be super sad. And then
I'm
everyone
so depressed now. Hey, but like more importantly, do you think that Tyrion knows?
No, I don't think he knows.
He was not pleased. Well, he looked a little worried.
He was really worried, and I thought maybe for a second I was like, "Well, is he jealous? Like, is he, was he on his way to Daenerys' room at that moment?"
But
I don't think so either. I think that he is worried because he has seen both of them make really bad decisions already because of the way they feel about each other. Like, yeah. Daenerys basically went and like lost a dragon because she wanted to go rescue Jon, and Jon ruined their alliance with Cersei because he couldn't undeclare for Daenerys because he already was in love with her, right? So I think that, and we don't know what kind of deal that Tyrion made with Cersei either, because that conversation kind of got cut short. So I think he's worried that the like the person that he has pledged to basically is losing herself, like in feeling when she should be thinking clearly.
Yeah,
and I think that he might be right.
It is kind of weird though, because you're right. Like Daenerys has like it's not like she hasn't had any lovers since Drogo, but nobody's ever like she's never been swept away by anybody really as much as she has with Cal and then John.
And that's what really just sells me on this. And I know that this is where like how you perceive chemistry basically like makes or breaks a relationship on this. First of all, because they had to get them together so quickly, but also because they had to really sell how overpowering and unexpected this connection between the two of them was. And I just think that for me, I see it, and I see that that kind of like overpowering love that they feel for each other, and how they're both kind of completely taken aback by it. But I also remember, I don't remember. Oh yeah, it was Gilmore Girls that I was listening to the Gilmore guys, and they kept being like, "Oh, you know, I know that we're supposed to ship Lorelai and Luke, but Lorelai and Christopher just have so much chemistry." And I think you guys, you and Merrimah, were saying that too, and I was like, I don't get it. Like, I don't see the chemistry. I think that they have no chemistry. So I think people are feeling that way about John and Danny. And then it's going to be really hard to swallow. But I don't have that problem because I see so much chemistry between them. So I buy it. You know what I mean? But I totally get, like, if you don't buy it.
They've been making hard eyes at each other since they met. Like, how...
They're, like, so in love now. They are, and it's amazing and it's beautiful. And it's like the only reason I'm glad that we have such long hiatus, because we can live in this world of imagining that they're going to have a happy ending.
Let's just not think too hard about this, you guys, okay? Sometimes love hits you in the face like, I don't know.
Like a dragon.
Like a dragon's tail. Slaps you across the head.
Exactly. Speaking of dragons, by the way, and hitting people in the head with dragons, like, oh my god, the wall came down.
Oh my god, Viserion
is an ice dragon now. What the frack? Oh my god, they're all doomed.
That was like the most terrifying thing I've seen in all my 7 years of watching Game of Thrones. Ice dragon.
Oh my god. But you know, it's so funny because, like, the ice dragon is so cool, but the actual White Walkers, like, for some reason, I don't find them terrifying at all, and I think it's because I look at them and I just see the
gif. The gif of the one guy.
Yeah, the dancing gif. Yes. Oh my god, that. But also the gentleman from Buffy. I also see those, and I'm like, I didn't find them scary either. So I'm just like, you're nothing. And he like, he still looks so the human.
Yeah.
You know, he's just like traipsing along on the ice like, should I catch this dragon today? And I'm like, what are you? What do you want? Like, I don't get it.
Do you know what I realized too? Like, I obviously, like, we've always known that there's a zombie element to Game of Thrones, but I feel like it wasn't really like put into complete perspective for me. It didn't come into full focus until these last two episodes. And I just can't get away from the zombies. Like, my obsession with The Walking Dead and my obsession with Game of Thrones and like, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know why. It just like, it was like this weird revelation that wasn't a revelation. It was just like, it's because they don't call them zombies, you know? And then you're like, oh, but they're zombies.
Yeah, they are zombies. It's pretty, yeah, they're walkers, stalkers, whatever the non-zombie word for them are. But it's going to be interesting to see how they pull that off in season 8.
Yeah.
What else? I also wanted to talk a little bit about Jaime Lannister, the prince that was promised to us.
The prince that was promised.
I love that he finally left Cersei. I was convinced that he was going to die. Like, because she already let that Tyrion go. So I thought, okay, Jaime's going to get it. And he didn't. He actually got to go away. And I just want him to reunite with Brienne now.
Me too. He's going to have some competition.
He is. If Tormund survived, yeah, because his fate was kind of left up in the air.
That's very true.
I don't even know where Davos is. He's like my favorite, and I lost track of him. And Gendry is nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, where the hell is Gendry?
We just got him back.
We did, and he like ran away. I expect at least one scene with Gendry every episode now, because he cannot die until him and Arya reunite and fall in love.
Like, he was rowing for 4 seasons, and then they were like, oh, and you're super good at running, and then they sent him off, and we haven't seen him since.
I know. And now the ice dragon's over there wreaking havoc, where I'm assuming he's repairing himself.
I hope he's gone. Like, considering how fast he runs, he's probably like halfway across Westeros by now.
Yeah, I mean, like, he runs and he rows. That's all he does.
He's gonna run into Winterfell in 801 and gonna be like, I'm here. It's gonna be perfect. Great. But yeah, I mean, it's exciting. I'm glad that Jaime finally kind of wrenched himself free and followed, you know. Brienne was like, fuck honor, but actually he was honorable, or loyalty, that's what she said. And he was very honorable when he decided to uphold his vow, unlike Cersei, who lies.
Yeah.
And it looks like, for the most part, like all of our heroes are on the same team now. Which is also why I think the Dany and Jon conflict has to get escalated, because otherwise there's basically no problem except for the White Walkers, because everyone just is happy now and loves each other, except Cersei and the White Walkers.
Right.
You know, like, there needs some more conflict there, but otherwise I'm pretty excited. Like, all things considered, this was a very gentle season of Game of Thrones.
It was.
And
nobody really died. Like,
yeah.
Baelish.
No, Littlefinger doesn't count.
Yeah, he doesn't count. He's been biding his time for a while.
Yeah, it was a bit of an unsatisfying death, I think, considering
it was
how much weight he's had in the story. But I'm still glad he died.
Probably satisfying for Arya, though. So that's what I'm holding on to, is that she probably felt super satisfied because she got to do it.
Some murder. Yeah,
there's been so many that have evaded her, but this one she got to do.
But yeah, so very exciting. So we'll be back in 2019. So
yeah, for more Game of Thrones talk.
I'm sure we'll find some reason to talk about it. Maybe probably. Actually, do you think that The Winds of Winter is going to be released?
I was thinking about that. I was like, does HBO know something we don't know? Is George actually almost done? Although I tuned into, here's another TV show recommendation, Hannah Hart, who's a big time YouTuber. She's got a new cooking show, or not a cooking show, she's got a new food show on the Food Network, and she just like travels around to different cities in the United States and like learns about the local foods and stuff like that. Her first episode's in New Mexico, and she walks into it's coming back to Game of Thrones. She walks into this restaurant to have this like some kind of awesome breakfast with green chili salsa on top, and who's sitting there having breakfast but George R. R. Martin. And I was like, George, you don't have time for breakfast. You need to write.
Oh my God.
I'm not joking. Just hanging out in this random diner in New Mexico makes this little cameo on the show. I Heart Food, if anybody's curious. It's a nice little soothing watch.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, we would love to hear what you guys, the listeners, thought of the Game of Thrones season 7 finale. Are you as enthralled by Daenerys as we are or not? We would love to hear either way. If there are still any Jon set, remember this time last year we were all about Jon and Sansa. I was like, oh my God, it would be so good. And now it's like, I'm so fickle when it comes to shipping. Like, it's terrible.
Me too.
This is why it's the 100 is hard for me because I'm just like, I love it all.
I ship everyone.
I think you ship everyone with everyone. But yeah, well, no, we would love to hear your thoughts and your favorite moments, your least favorite moments. You can get in touch with us in all of the usual ways. We will repeat the listener feedback information at the end of the show, but we do have a bunch of feedback to get to first. So do you want to start us off? We can go back and forth with the tweets.
Sure. This first one comes from Fresby, who says, caught up on the podcast rec episodes, and I wanted to ask if either of you have heard of Call Your Girlfriend. My bestie and I are big fans. I have not heard of this show. Oh, I feel like I've heard of it in passing, but I've never actually listened to it.
I've never heard of it. Huh. I need to look up to see what it's even about, but interesting. We'll check it out. Kate Arnold says to you, I've been loving Doodle Oodle music too. How great is 610? I think it's my favorite.
Yes.
Doodle Oodle? Is that how you say it?
Doodle Oodle. Doty is the artist name. Oh. This is my Howie hype. That's her Twitter handle. Last week. Also, coincidentally, big presence on YouTube, but she's a musician and she has an EP out called You. I think you might actually really like it, Selena, so maybe you should check it out. But 6 out of 10, I don't think I talked about any of my favorite songs, but 6 out of 10 is just, it's beautiful. It's all about feeling like you're not enough and the way that she kind of channels emotion and concept feelings into songs and just like puts them into really like, simplified lyrics sounds like such a bad compliment, but it's not, because I feel like it's really easy to be wordy with songs, but it's not easy to convey a universal emotion in a few words. And I feel like she does that really well. But yeah, 6 out of 10 is beautiful. So I like that you're liking it, Kate.
Cool.
Anyway, Chanel says, trying out Riverdale hype, me and my bae need a new show to binge. I hope that you're enjoying it, Chanel. Let us know.
Yeah. Laura Morrow says, to me, hope your wilderness adventure was well. If hype ever does house calls again, hopefully I can chat with you. Also, okay, Game of Thrones blew my mind. I loved the Sansa and Arya twist and their finale scene. Also, one of my ships sailed. Yay! I'm guessing literally. Hashtag boat set. Awesome. Same. I did love the last twist with Sansa and Arya. That redeemed a lot of the story for me.
Abby Lee says, I loved episode, I'm assuming 158, that was last week. I hope I can participate in the house calls next time.
Yay!
Abby, send us your Skype username. And we actually, you know what, if you are ever interested in doing that, just like send us a DM and I'll just put them in a list, and next time we're gonna do something like that, we'll let you guys know so that you'll know when to be on. But yeah, send in your Skype usernames and we'll start there.
The Lady Ash also has a comment about Game of Thrones. She says, I loved the Game of Thrones finale. I can't believe we have to wait until 2019 for the final season. I hope it will be worth the wait. Worth the wait? I guess. I'm also enjoying Look What You Made Me Do. I was so thrown off at first by the new sound, but I am here for this. And for what I've been up to, I have arrived late to the game of Animal Crossing. Have either of you played it? It's so much fun. Did Selena enjoy her time away? And Pam, what do you think of the new Taylor? Hashtag excited for the next episode. I did enjoy my time away. Thank you. It was wonderful. Mm. And Pam likes the new Taylor.
I didn't say that. No? Actually, I think that it's growing on me, but the music video has helped. But I will say that as a longtime Taylor fan, Taylor Swift has a bad habit of picking not very strong singles. I always feel like sometimes they're the weakest songs off of the album, because she's picking something that could potentially bring, you know, a universal appeal, more people into her music, which is, you know, a wonderful strategy. Ed Sheeran does the same thing. But I will say that I am anticipating that it won't be the best song off the album. Shalomiel says, but also, this is for Selena, but also I missed you in the last episode of Hype, but hopefully you had a lovely time in the woods. By the way, I just forgot where Selena was going. She wasn't in the woods.
I was in different woods, but they were still woods.
But that was like my running joke. It's the running joke of the show, basically.
I know. Well, usually I go to the woods, but this time I actually went again. I did go to the woods. They were just different woods, so the joke still works.
That's good. I'm glad you're keeping up with your brand, TM.
Yeah, yes, hashtag the woods. All right, so we have a couple of emails, and I think it's hilarious that, because we're going to go back and forth on these as well, and I'm going to give you the first one.
So much to say about Taylor Swift, begins Melissa. I don't follow a lot of artists very closely these days, certainly not big pop stars, but there is something about Taylor Swift that I've always appreciated. Knowing that she was a staff writer at Sony at the age of 16 before she made a name for herself, I respect her abilities. I think she's a pretty intelligent person and it's reflected in her writing. I respect her for being able to hit adulthood without going through that phase that young artists always seem to, where their PG music and image suddenly get over-sexualized while they also get caught doing drugs or driving drunk or what have you. She's always been very controlling and conscious of her image, for better or worse, but now seeing this new Taylor, I think we're getting something that was a long time coming, scandal or no scandal. That rebellious phase of getting frustrated with how her image is judged is finally catching up to her, as much as she's tried to avoid it. And though I don't think we're going to see Taylor twerking in a leather bikini with a giant pink forest creature anytime soon, I think there's about a 90% chance she's going to look back on this phase with a bit of regret and embarrassment. That doesn't mean it wasn't likely to happen in some form at some point. The thing that frustrates me about Taylor, that always has, is that I feel like there is a more mature Taylor in there somewhere, but who constantly gets distracted by trivial things. I'm just waiting for the day that she gets tired of trying to get personal revenge and goes after a larger cause or deeper topics instead. Maybe this isn't her, maybe I'm projecting what I wish for her, but it's only frustrating to me because I know she'd be damn good at it. Where's the Taylor we got a glimpse of for a day when she was on trial earlier this month? The Taylor who wrote the song Never Grow Up. Just hope that on the other side of the self-centered, undead, creature of a thing night phase, we get more confident, well-balanced Taylor who uses her power for good instead of email.
Taylor. But her emails.
Her power for good instead of... That's so good. Okay. A well-balanced Taylor who uses her power for good instead of evil. Wink, Melissa.
That was great. Thanks, Melissa. Very, very good points.
That's really good. Yeah. Creature of the night thing. That's my favorite.
I love that observation, though. That's very...
Melissa, I don't know if you're a patron, so just in case you're not, one of the points that I am going to bring up in my video, which I'll bring up briefly here, is if this is what Taylor needs, if like Reputation is the album Taylor needs to make in order to feel better about like everything that's happened and just make it like a therapeutic experiment, that's fine. But if she is hoping that this album somehow is going to incite some kind of like apology from everybody that she's still really upset with, whether it be Kimye or Katy Perry or anybody like that, then I think that, a sign of growing up is to just understand that you're not always going to get your way in terms of that. So if this is something that she needs to do for herself, that's great. But if she's doing it to gain some kind of acceptance, it's like, you know, sometimes you just need to like move on. It's like when we deal with internet trolls on a much smaller scale. You can't please everybody, so at some point you need to stop trying.
Very true. The mute button is there for a reason, you guys.
That's right. I should use it more often.
Yeah. All right, so it's my turn. My email is slightly less long. It comes from Jenna. She says, "Hi, Pam and Selena. Love the show and thanks so, so much for all of your tireless efforts. Just a quick line to say I had a fantastic weekend thanks to your recs in Ep 157. I binged season one of Younger and absolutely devoured The Student Prince. So good. Keep up the amazing work. Cheers, Jenna." Yay! Oh my God, Student Prince is making its rounds. I love it. We're spreading the word. I don't know if Jenna, if you've seen Merlin yet, I would love to know just because I'm keeping tabs on if anyone else is reading it.
Because I love it. Was it Shelley who said that she read it out of context, which I think is amazing.
It's the best thing that like has ever happened. Anyway, even if you've already read seen Merlin. Obviously, it's amazing that you're reading The Student Prince now. And what a wonderful way to spend a weekend. Like, seriously, it's just such a good story. It's going to put a smile on your face. So I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Okay, we have one more email here. Hello, Hype. I've been listening to the show for a few years and have been meaning to email for so long. A few episodes ago, you mentioned the Lucille Ball biopic. I'm interested in seeing it, though I'm not super excited. That is most likely because I grew up and still live in Lucy's hometown. She's a big deal for our town. We have a museum, a mural, two statues, one better than the other, and that has been named Scary Lucy. By the way, if you haven't Googled Scary Lucy before, you should look it up. It's actually kind of like, why? Anyway, Rose continues, and we even have a week-long birthday celebration in August. Oversaturation has caused many locals to be blasé about her, which is a shame because she was great. It would be cool if the movie premiere was here. My next thought is a quick one. Is it Medici? I feel like we got somebody that emailed in and said we were pronouncing it wrong.
It was Medici. Yes, that's what we said. Okay, it wrong.
Cool. It is Medici.
Yes.
Cool. Medici, I've never heard of it until you mentioned it. Now I'm interested in checking it out. My thought about this is that you mentioned Sean Bean will appear in season two. I wonder how long it will take for his character to be killed off. Seriously, the first thing that came to my mind. Very excited to start watching Merlin for my first time. It has been on my watch list for a long time. Your upcoming specials are giving me the push I need to finally dive in. Thank you for making an hour of my workday more interesting, and I can't wait to hear what new stories come up next. Rose. Thanks for that email, my God, Rose. That was really nice. I'm really excited you're going to watch Merlin.
I know. We have to. We'll let you guys know as soon as we know when we're starting Merlin. We don't want to drag it out for too long, but, you know, I've been on holiday and, yes, you know, all kinds of things have been happening. So we'll get around to it. We'll let you guys know, because I know that so many of our listeners are excited to start watching it or rewatching it with us. And we are excited. I'm excited, certainly. So, and then obviously we also have to watch Medici. Sorry. Mm-hmm. We have to learn to say it and then we can watch it.
It's like Veni, Vidi, Vici. Yes. All right, I'm done.
Maybe we should just watch like Merlici and Merlici. Combine the two. And some,
I mean, maybe
way.
Medici is secretly a Merlin alternate universe.
Oh, this is so good. Oh my God, I wasn't going to say it, but yes, totally.
Everything is a Merlin alternate universe.
It
all
is,
of you
though.
New fans, like, this is what you have to look forward to. After you watch Merlin, there is only before Merlin and after Merlin. And after
everything
Merlin,
is Merlin.
You just, everything is Merlin. Yeah. Yeah.
The floor is Merlin. Like,
the floor is Merlin. And you're all like lying on it,
yes,
like we are.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Anyway, so as I said, we will be keeping you guys updated as we lay out a schedule, etc. If you would like to email us or tweet us or write to us in any other way about this show or what you would like us to talk about in future episodes, you can tweet us at Hypable Hype. You can find us on Hypable, which is hypable.com. You can find us on email. hype@hypable.com. It's like that sentence. There was something wrong with that sentence. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. You can find us on Instagram at hypablehype. And of course, you can come be a Patreon and see and hear all of our bonus content on patreon.com/hypepodcast. This week's bonus discussion will be all about Gossip Girl. XOXO. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Hi guys.
Bye. 'm gonna tweet out of context quote from this week's hype. The floor is Merlin. just have to find a really good gift to go with it, but we can get started on this.
I'm sure there's one of like them lying on the ground or something.
Oh, there's that one of Gawain and Percival lying. Do you remember that scene? Like that gratuitous, like,
oh, when they were
shirtless.
Scene? Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. I'll use that.
Good.
The floor is Merlin.